All right, here we go. That was the opening music to Only Angels Have Wings, starring Cary Grant and Jean Arthur, Rita Hayworth, Richard Barthelmess, Thomas Mitchell, who I really liked his character. He's always good.
He is, yes.
And one of my favorite characters as well, Sig Ruman as Dutchy. Yeah.
Dutchy.
And he was the colonel in To Be or Not to Be.
I know. He made a career out of playing that same character.
Yeah, we talked a lot about him when we talked about that movie. And you're listening to Classic Movie Reviews, and you can find us on the internet at www.classicmoviereviews.net. And on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/classicmoviereviews. And I'm Matt Johnson, coming to you from North Bend.
And I'm Bob Johnson in Los Angeles. This movie, Only Angels Have Wings, was released in May of 1939. And as I watched it again, I thought, this movie, they could take the script for this movie and use it now for a new version of that same film. And it would be really exciting because the... For me, the storyline and the drama and the relationships of all these people together would lend itself perfectly to a remake. A lot of these older movies, I've never really thought they would be remade that well, but this one I think could be a huge hit, like a summer blockbuster movie, because it's so well done. And kudos to Howard Hawks, the director, who has so many films that we've reviewed and that we haven't even touched yet, like The Big Sleep. I think we've done that one from 1945, and then they redid it in 1946. Red River from 1948. Mm-hmm. And my all-time favorite early science fiction movie, The Thing from Another World.
Yeah.
He said he wasn't the director on that, but everything I read said that he was. That was from 1951. He was behind the scenes kind of making it come together. Just a really talented man.
Yeah, one that...
with a long career.
One that... one that interested me was The Dawn Patrol from 1930. And I guess there's some similarities between that movie and Only Angels Have Wings.
I've heard of that one. I can't remember. I don't think I've seen that one. He was quite a active kind of guy. He did all kinds of things, very talented and very creative and kind of nonstop in terms of his pursuit of things. And had a long life, lived until he was 81. But the movie is just fun. It's just a fun movie, you know, and I set aside the special effects. You know, we've been spoiled today by the technology of special effects. But even from 1939, it doesn't really get in the way of the film. I want to spend a summer being that guy that was up on the pass with the binoculars, giving them reports. And then when the weather got bad, he brought in his donkey.
That was
so
great.
It wouldn't get wet.
And he had that line. Job. He had that line where you got to send up a new generator belt. And he's like, well, what happened to the one you had? Oh, the burrow ate it.
Yeah, right. said, Grant's character said, "You're on your own on that one."
Yeah. Why don't you take a strip of his hide? Jesus. Well, something I noticed in this movie that reminded me of The Thing from Another World was the pace of the dialogue and how there's overlapping dialogue. And I remember we commented about that in The Thing. And I wonder if that's a bit of a Howard Hawks trademark. You know, it's that really quick dialogue. It felt very real. You know, it just felt like you were right there in the cantina with them.
Dutchie? Meet Miss Lee.
How do you do?
Miss Lee, this imposing gentleman is the postmaster and leading banker of Barranca.
Well, I've always wanted to know.
Also that. The owner of this general store on your right, proprietor of the bar on your left, and chief cook and bottle washer of this luxurious hotel and restaurant you see before you.
Well, that hardly seems enough, mister.
John Van Ryder is the name. Please don't pay any attention to
how
those
about boys. A drink, Dutchie, huh?
Sure, sit down. Make yourself at home. Well, what are you going to have?
How's the local scotch?
Oh, I carry only the best, eh, boys?
Make mine bourbon, Dutchie.
Me too.
Well, me too.
My scotch is good. I drink it myself.
Why don't you have one with us, Mr. Van Ryder?
I will.
I do think it's a characteristic of his films because I think about The Big Sleep. That dialogue is really snappy. Sometimes I have to really stay alert to keep track of where they're going with the story. Mm-hmm. And The Big Sleep is that way. And then, of course, we've reviewed Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah.
And, man, that's going 100 miles an hour through the whole film. I think that is a feature of his films.
Another Cary Grant movie with Audrey Hepburn, if I remember correctly. No, it wasn't Audrey. Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah, Catherine Hepburn. Well, this plot is just a great action drama film. And at the beginning, Cary Grant wore different hats during the film.
Yeah.
And that hat he had at the beginning, I love that. I've never seen one quite that stylish.
Yeah, he looked very well dressed throughout the movie, but really at the beginning when he first comes out of his office, and he's got the gun belt on, and he's got the like short coat and that hat, and I'm like, wow, he's a caballero.
I thought maybe he was headed over to help Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Exactly.
He was outfitted for that, or the Secret of the Incas.
And the number of people that are just walking around with pistols, you know, in holsters around their hip. It's like the Old West.
it's the wild frontier of South America. Mm-hmm. His character, Jeff Carter, is a no-nonsense head pilot and manager of the airlines, which is a very small and barely solvent business. I think it's owned by Dutchie.
Yeah, we use the term airline here loosely.
Right. You're not getting me up in any of those planes.
Oh, God,
even
no.
The Ford Trimotor. No way,
no
thank
way.
You. And then could it have been in a more dangerous spot?
Well, and that runway, I mean, could they not level it out and dry it out? They're always like landing in these giant puddles or taking off through these giant puddles.
To say nothing of the fact they've got like maybe 100 yards before they, it's in order to clear the way to the pass.
And the weather, you know, that was one of the things I really liked about the movie was all the weather. So we've got fog, we've got rain, we've got wind and snow, and they're always battling against the weather. It seems like that's the most challenging part of the job, next to maybe the mechanical problems of their planes.
Yeah, right. Or the dramatic relationships between some of the pilots.
Yeah.
But let's add a little fuel to the fire by having Bonnie Lee show up. She's a piano playing entertainer that arrives on a banana boat to the town of Barranca.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ripe with possibilities, and they all play out in the plot.
Well, and I got to say, it was very creepy the way that those two guys followed her around town.
You know? Yes.
Like they were stalking her.
Where's the police?
Yeah.
And they were way, way out of line. I mean, that would have to be cleaned up if they made the movie today. That was of its time.
Oh, yeah.
But certainly not of the time now, at least not by anybody I want to know.
I think it was Joe Souther and maybe Jent Shelton that were following her around. Those were the character names. And it was creepy. And then when they started talking, it was less creepy because she was just happy to see two Americans, because I guess she hadn't really seen any American people in a while. And so she just was so happy to like have somebody to talk to that knew like where she was from, and she could talk to them about things that she could relate to more. But it's a good thing she had a very strong personality, because there was a lot of kind of inappropriate behavior by the guys in that cantina too. So.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding. And again, of its time in terms of some of the action like that. And then to complicate it even more, as if there wasn't enough already, Bat McPherson shows up, and Bat with his wife, who's played by a very young Rita Hayworth in her first major role.
Yeah.
And his history is fraught with drama, because he worked in the U.S. and he was on a flight and there were mechanical troubles. He parachuted out of the plane. The plane crashed and just by coincidence killed Thomas Mitchell's brother, the Kid Dabb's brother.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the chances, right?
So it just gets more and more tense.
And
nobody likes that guy.
Yeah, Rita Hayworth's character doesn't know about his backstory. So she plays Judy, and Judy's married to Bat, and Bat never told her about this stuff that's gone on. So she's wondering why everybody's treating him so badly. And she confronts Cary Grant's character, and he's like, well, don't ask me, you know. I'm not going to tell you. You got to talk to him. Talk to your husband.
Hello, Judy.
Jeff, I'd like to talk to you.
Why, what's on your mind?
Bat. I just heard he was carrying nitroglycerin.
Oh, don't worry about it, Judy. He's pretty good, you know.
Yes, I know, but it's very dangerous.
Not while he's in the air, it isn't. Now, why don't you run along? Let Bat do the worrying.
Oh, don't be like that with me. Why does he always get things like this to do?
Now, Judy.
Oh, please, Jeff. I told you I was happy, but I lied to you. Why don't people want to work with him? What's he done that makes people act the way they do?
Why ask me?
Because you're the only one I can ask. Oh, please, Jeff. I've got to know. Can't you see what...
Calling Baranka. Judy. Calling Baranka.
Go ahead, Tex.
Wind's coming up. Doesn't look so good. It's closing in pretty fast.
Yeah? Have you seen McPherson yet?
Went by here a couple of minutes ago.
All right. Calling McPherson. You better run along, Judy.
No, Jeff. I'm staying.
Collie McPherson. How's your weather, good or bad?
Looks like there's a chance to get through.
I didn't ask you that. Is it good or bad?
It's bad.
All right, turn around and come back. Now listen, when you're out in the clear, dump that nitro.
I can get this stuff down all right.
You heard me, I said dump it. Now watch yourself while you're doing it.
Say, Jeff, there's a flock of big birds in the pass. Look like condors to me. Why not have him drop that soup on them?
Not a bad idea, Dad. You hear him, McPherson?
Yeah.
All right, Tex will line you up on him.
Okay.
Are you feeling better, Judy?
Thanks, Jeff. Now will you tell me what he's done?
No. No, you'll have to ask him.
You think that'll be easy to do?
I actually like the way that they did that. They didn't make it into some kind of weird love triangle like they did in the movie that we just reviewed. Was it Magombo?
Yeah, where the two women show up in Africa with Clark Gable.
Yeah.
Well, but a part of the backstory is that Judy was Jeff's old girlfriend.
Yeah, so they're
it doesn't go anywhere in the script. They don't pursue that. He's more interested in making sure they get that government contract and trying to find pilots to go with that are physically able to take the planes up, because Kid Dab has lost his eyesight, or at least the eyesight that he needs to fly a plane. And in order to pass the test, he had somehow memorized the chart. You know, this film has two sides to it. Most of the plot and most of the story and all, I'm really enjoying. It would hold up well today. But the side stories of how those guys interact with Bonnie Lee and all that just would have to be reworked.
Yeah. I read some interesting comments on IMDb that kind of put the movie in a little bit different light for me. Because one of the things I was wondering is, like, why are these guys down in South America flying these planes over the Andes to deliver mail? And, like, three people had died in the last couple months, so it's extremely dangerous. And, you know, why would anybody do that? And they kind of play it off like, well, they love flying, they love danger. And for Jeff Carter, Cary Grant's character, he's trying to save the airline because it's about to go under. And if he can deliver the mail on time and on schedule, then they're going to, like you said, get this government contract. And that is going to help Kid Dab, who's his, like, best friend. And, you know, he wants to save the airline. And then Bat McPherson comes in and he's trying to prove himself because of what you described happened. And he wants to, like, kind of make amends. And so he's taking all the most dangerous missions, or not even, I mean, flights, I guess. But my point here is that this was released in 1939, and there's some speculation that Howard Hawks was sort of like guessing that we were going to enter World War II, and that in a lot of ways this is actually a war movie. And if you changed it from delivering the mail to, like, delivering supplies or fight, you know, going on missions, then everything makes a lot more sense. Like, the reasons that they would be out there flying and sort of the way that they react when one of the pilots dies, because they have this thing where they don't mourn the recently passed pilot. They just sort of move on.
Calling lookout.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Any change, Tex?
No, just about the same.
All right. We're all set to go down here.
Okay. I'll let you know.
Now, wait a minute, Jeff.
What?
Well, you are not going to...
Go ahead and say it.
Oh, look here, Jeff. When you got me into this flying business a year and a half ago, I was doing pretty good. I made good money. I ate good. I slept good nights.
And in about a week, you'll either collect or lose your shirt.
Oh, I'm not thinking about that. I just can't go on killing nice kids like that. Not if I lose a dozen shirts.
You think you're the only one that feels that way?
Then why do you send them up for in that kind of weather?
Because I'm running an airline. And I'm not running it any different to anybody I ever flew for.
Oh, Jeff.
Now, look, Dutchie. Joe died flying, didn't he? And that was his job. He just wasn't good enough. That's why he got it.
I ain't built like you are, Jeff. I shouldn't be in such a business. We can't go on like that.
Why not? You got another pilot coming in on the next boat.
Oh, Jeff. You're a hard man. Much too hard.
Cut it out.
I can't.
Cut it out! Look, Dutchie. What's the use of feeling bad about something that couldn't be helped? Give me a match, will you? I told you, Joe just wasn't good enough. If he hadn't got it tonight, he was bound to get it sooner or later.
Then you had no business to let him fly.
What, ground that kid? Say, he'd sooner be where he is than quit.
Another comment talked about the lost generation. That generation that were young and fighting in World War I. And, you know, that would have been right about the age that Cary Grant's character was. Like, he could have been in his early 20s or late teens fighting in World War One, and now he finds himself doing this, you know, 25 or whatever years later.
No, about 20 years.
About 20 years later.
Yeah.
And so he might be still experiencing PTSD from the war. So, like, when you put it in that context, the movie has, like, a whole nother layer to it, and it's even more interesting to watch, I think.
That lost generation theme is very prevalent in the novels and stories from the 20s and 30s. Yeah. Ernest Hemingway and many others writing about that. I like where this takes us, because then you could take it one step further, and this is the crews that are flying over the Himalayas from India over to China to send supplies to the Nationalists and the Chinese other forces that were fighting Japan.
Yeah.
And they had to go over the Himalayas in these DC threes, and I think they maybe had one other larger plane.
See, this is where I think the remake,
yeah,
if you did a remake like and set it in that setting, and you had like a lot, you wouldn't even have to change the story that much, but you just up the stakes a little bit and I think set it in that World War II setting. I think with today's special effects and the epic scope of that, it could be amazing.
I think this one is ripe for a remake. They're going to deliver nitroglycerin to a mine operation that's over on the other side of these dangerous mountains, along with the mail. And so it's a deadly mission, and Kid Dabb cannot make it because of his eyesight. So guess who gets the assignment? Bat McPherson.
Yeah.
And that just think of the special effects that could be used to make that following scenes so realistic. And here's a guy up on the pass with his binoculars giving them weather reports. The pass is cloudy, the pass is clear. And they can't get high enough to get over the mountains. And then they come back down. I hope I get this right. And he has to return. Oh no, they come back down and they're gonna try a different route. But the condors fly into the plane and seriously injure Kid Dabb, who's in the plane with.
No, that's a different. That's
is so, that am I
that's
mixing
a different
up
mission? Plots? That's a different deadly mission. So. Bat McPherson is the pilot because he has to take on these really dangerous flights, and he gets up to the pass, and it's too socked in. Like he can't make it. And that guy in the lookout tells him to turn around, and Cary Grant's character is like, yeah, turn around and dump the nitroglycerin on the way back down.
Oh, that's and then, right. Cause and then he's bombarding the birds.
And then, yeah. So the guy,
I forgot that
the guy in the lookout is like, well, while you're up here with that nitroglycerin, do you mind blowing up these condors? And I was like, what?
Comes back
what?
To hurt him.
Yeah, why? And he actually does like drop some of the nitroglycerin on the top of this mountain, and there's all these birds there. And so that was an exciting scene, though, when he's trying to fly the plane and also drop the nitroglycerin out of the bottom of the plane.
That's right. He's by himself. This is, yeah, I mixed up the scenes. I think they put that in because it's a really great action sequence. And young folks, if I'd have been in the theater and I was about 12, I'd be, yeah, drop those babies.
And he's blowing up the mountains. It was great. And, you know, for 1939, I got to say the special effects were really good. And it actually was nominated for special effects for an Academy Award. It's also part of the National Film Preservation Board. So it's part of that. A lot of these movies that we review are included in there. But anyway, so Bat has to go on a few different exciting missions. There's another one where he has to deliver a doctor to a camp that's on the other side
of
the
mountains.
Right.
I fast-forwarded.
And it's very dangerous to land up on this plateau because it's a sheer drop. It's not very much room. And he's able to do it, and then they have to take the injured person and the doctor and one other person back. And so the plane is overloaded, And in order to get enough speed, he has to basically just drop off the edge of this cliff and nosedive down to get speed. And that was exciting, too.
It was. I could just see that done today. Yeah. Wow. I forget.
But what's amazing to me is another thing that made me laugh was that they're taking these planes up after having been drinking in the cantina. Like, I don't know how drunk half of these guys were as they were flying these planes. But
I know. I don't want to know too much about that.
That might have contributed to how many people were dying. I mean, it didn't seem to... Like, there was one where Cary Grant has to go up. He just had, like, two or three drinks, and he just pours cold water over his head and grabs a pot of coffee, and he's like, okay, I'm ready.
Oh, hey, Jeff!
What?
Tex just called from lookout. He says the pass is clearing.
Yeah, did your weight glass up?
No, because, well, Tex says it's nobody's picnic.
All right, wind up number 7, put some coffee in it.
I already did.
So long, Bonnie. Have a nice trip.
Hey, wait a minute.
Huh?
Are you going up yourself?
Sure.
When'll you be back?
Oh, it takes 3 hours each way. Won't be back until after your boat sails. I'll look you up in New York sometime.
What?
What? Huh?
You say you'll look me up in New York sometime.
Sure.
When are
you... I'll see you there. What'd you say?
When are you coming?
Next week, 2:00. Hey, I like that saying goodbye. Let's try it again, huh? So long, Bonnie.
Say, things happen awful fast around here.
Mm-hmm.
But Bat gets the job done. He gets back.
Yeah.
And you'd think he'd get a break.
But he literally has to turn around in 5 minutes and go on another mission. Or I keep calling it a mission, but another flight to... And this time they are going to take this new plane up that has 3 engines. And they think that it's going to have enough power to actually go over the top of the mountains. And... So, but it's a 2-person job, and there's this funny scene where Cary Grant is going to be the co-pilot with Bat, but Bonnie Lee, played by Jean Arthur, doesn't want him to go and is really upset because this is another really dangerous flight with bad weather, and she accidentally shoots Cary Grant in the shoulder.
Yeah, she also had a gun. She whipped it out, and then she gives it up, and it goes off.
Well, I think she took his gun. I think
Right. She did. She took his gun. Yeah. And then he gets wounded in the left shoulder and
so then Kid,
can't make the flight.
So then Kid has to go up with Bat, even though Kid's eyesight's pretty bad. But they just need another person in the plane to operate everything. And they get up to 15,600 feet, and then I guess... Either the air is too thin, or I'm not sure what exactly happened there because I'm not a pilot, but the plane isn't able to climb any higher than that. And then it actually stalls out, and they're sort of like doing this spiral down. And Bat's like, well, it's fine. I'll just wait till the air gets thicker, and then we'll pull out of it. You know. And they get down to like 6,000 feet. And I'm like, they just dropped over 6,000 feet like a roller coaster.
He didn't seem to be that upset by it. I mean, he was under a lot of stress, but he was pretty calm.
Yeah. So they decide that they'll just go through the pass, even though Jeff is like, turn around, you know, don't try to do that. The weather's too bad, and Kid can't see, and Kid's like, nope, we're gonna do it. How many times have I flown that route without being able to see anyway? I know I can just feel my way through there.
The weather was so bad that lookout up on the mountain had to bring the burrow inside his cabin so it wouldn't blow away in the rain. That was a cozy little scene.
It was.
I mean, they had these little snippets that were... I don't know if they were intended to be funny, but I found that to be funny.
I did too.
He's in there with the donkey.
Well, of course, this doesn't go well, and they get hit by some condors. Kid is really badly injured, and then 2 of the engines catch on fire, But somehow Bad is able to turn the plane around and actually land it on the field back from where they started. And he's got burned hands and half of his face is burnt. And it turns out that Kid has a broken neck. And so that was terrible. And I was curious, like, what happened to Kid? Because he was just having a broken neck by itself. He was still alive, and then he said, well, I want everybody to leave, including Jeff, and then he died? Like,
yeah, he must have had some serious internal injuries that we didn't find out about it during the filming.
Yeah.
But it was very poignant. He asked everybody to leave, even Jeff. It was alone when he died.
Yeah, that was sad.
But Bat had now proven himself, and so he's accepted by all the members of the crews that are in the cantina. I thought the miniature effects of the plane on fire were exceptionally well done.
Yeah, they were.
That had to be really difficult to pull off.
Special effects up in the mountains with the weather and the plane flying through were really cool. Yeah. So there's another dynamic going on in the movie, which we haven't touched on yet, which is Cary Grant's character, Jeff. He absolutely refuses to ask any woman to basically do anything for him or with him. Like, he won't ask Bonnie Lee to stay with him, even though I think he wants to, and he's in love with her, and she's in love with him, and all she wants him to do is to say that he wants her to stay, and he won't do it because he's got this idea that no matter what, even if somebody says that they'll stick with him, that it's just too much. It's too stressful to be a partner with somebody who's like a pilot in these situations. And like, that just kind of plays through the whole movie, right? And it's yeah. One of the reasons why him and Rita Hayworth's character broke up, because Judy couldn't take it. But it kind of resolves itself in a fun way at the very end of the movie, you know? I like the way they did that.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, I think the way he views Bonnie Lee and Judy... You bear with me for a minute. We could loop back to our earlier sidebar on what happened as a backstory to him during World War One and following World War One, and did he have a very deep love affair with someone during the war, and was she killed during one of the bombings or battles or after the war, didn't survive, and has that entered into his treatment and view of how he needed to isolate himself from ever having those emotions again. I mean, this just all feeds into that earlier scenario that we put together.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's right. Yeah.
So in order for him to let her know that it would be wonderful if she would stay, he's using Kit Dabb's trick coin, which has two sides, both with heads on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he tells her or asks her to, if she flips the coin and it comes up heads, she should stay. I forget the dialogue there, but
yeah.
Instead of just saying it, he has to go through this other method to let her know that he wants her to stay.
She says, "No, I won't play it that way. You've got to actually tell me." And then he's like, "Well, it's been great knowing you. Have a good trip back." And
yeah.
And then he heads out for another dangerous flight. But before he leaves, he gives her the coin and says, "Well, here's a souvenir." And I think he knows that she's going to realize that it's a double-headed coin, and that no matter what, she was going to get heads, and that he wants her to stay. And that's kind of the end scene of the movie. Is her realizing that. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that relationship is going to last.
I know, especially with the kind of work he's doing.
Yeah.
She was really good in the role and had a long career too. And she's in one of my favorite westerns, Shane.
Oh, yeah.
She plays Van Heflin's wife.
That's right. She was good in that.
She started, her first film was in 1923. So, yeah, she had a long career. But the overall movie, I think, is just excellent. It's fun to watch. You have to sort of just kind of get used to the special effects. I gave it a 8, leaning to a 9, mainly because it's hard to get past those special effects, but those two guys at the beginning wandering around, sort of looking for trouble, sort of brought it back from what I would think could be a 10. If it was done today, if I reviewed it today, it would be, though, that part of the film I would have to change. To change their characters. And, of course, use the best special effects money can buy.
Yeah. When the movie started, I had this sinking feeling like, oh, did we pick a bad movie? Am I going to just regret that I suggested this movie? For, like, the first 5 minutes of the film, I was just thinking, like, I'm not liking this movie already.
Yeah.
And I think
it starts out that way, doesn't it?
And I think... Yeah. You know, it's one of these things that, yeah, it's of its time. So I guess you put it in that perspective. But I also think that opening, that kind of opening montage of her wandering through the little town and those guys stalking her could have been edited out or edited down. And it did feel a little weird. Anyway, that's my roundabout way of saying that I also thought it was an 8. There was another weird thing about the movie where Bonnie Lee just disappeared for like a half an hour in the film. It was weird. Like, she was a big part of the movie at the beginning. I mean, she's like the first main character that we meet coming off the boat. And then she's really involved up until the point where she decides that she's going to miss her boat. And then she just sort of disappears. And it was like, where did Bonnie Lee go? Is she still there? I think she's still there. Which was kind of strange. Like, I wasn't quite sure. I would have done that a little bit differently, like to have her kind of be a part of the film the whole way through. But anyway, I enjoyed it. It was a good movie.
Yeah, it was fun. I didn't think to look up if it was successful in the theaters, but I would have to think it would have been in the middle of 1939 and probably coming out around the time when the summer films would be released. Although in those days, they just had a lot of good movies throughout the year because that was the main way of people reaching entertainment. Oh, I wanted to mention too that it was done on Lux Radio Theater in 1939. Cary Grant played that same character.
Oh, awesome. I'll try to remember to link out to that on the show notes.
It came out on Lux Radio Theater. I have that right here. Oh, I had it. Oh, here it is. It about 2 weeks after it came out in theaters.
Wow.
It was on the radio. You know, that's not a lot different than in some ways with the streaming of today.
Hmm.
A film might come
out
in the theaters, then they'll stream it a little bit later, even at the same time. Here the film comes out, and then 2 weeks later on Lux Radio Theater, which was a hugely popular venue on CBS Radio, had it 2 weeks later.
Hmm. That's cool.
Pretty good timing.
We completely forgot to mention that the composer was Dmitri Tiomkin, who we really enjoyed in other films that he's done.
What a talented and creative person he was. Well, I would recommend people watching it if they haven't seen it. I know we had dinner with some friends last night, and one of the people at dinner said, "Oh, that was her favorite Cary Grant movie."
I could see that. He's really good in it. I kind of went down the IMDb comment rabbit hole last night, and there was somebody that had mentioned that James Cagney would have been a better actor for that role. And I was like, I don't think so. I think Cary Grant was perfect because he had that sort of nonchalance about him where he sort of was able to just play the part as somebody who just didn't care. But there were moments where his true feelings came through. Like there was one right after that first death, about 20 minutes in the movie, Bonnie Lee is really upset and she can't understand why nobody is mourning this guy's passing. And she storms out of the cantina and Cary Grant's character gets up and follows her and says, well, he says to her,
wait a minute, you little fool. Why don't you use your head? Oh, come on, stop it.
I don't know how you can act like this with that poor kitty.
Yeah, I know. He's dead.
Yes, he's dead.
That's right. And he's been dead about 20 minutes, and all the weeping and wailing in the world won't make him any deader 20 years from now. If you feel like bawling, how do you think we feel?
Well,
come on. Go on outside and walk around and stay there until you put all that together.
And there, you know, that really says a lot with one line. Like, yeah, they're all, like, devastated, but they can't let it get to them because they have a job to do. And then at the very end of the movie, once after Kid had died, he's sitting in his office alone and looking over Kid's possessions, and he's crying, and he's got tears in his eyes. And Bonnie Lee sees that, and I thought that scene was really well done. Like, the way that they portrayed that, I felt was pretty realistic. So I really liked him in the role, and I thought, you know, all the lead actors and actresses did a great job.
I agree. He played it sort of as a fatalistic person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that was our review of Only Angels Have Wings, and coming to you from North Bend, this is Matt.
And here in Los Angeles is Bob, wishing everybody happy movie watching. We had dinner last night with a nice couple that live out in Camarillo, and we were talking about old movies, and she said, what's your favorite Cary Grant movie? And I said, oh, I think it's Notorious. And she said, mine is Only Angels Have Wings. And I said, really? We're gonna podcast that tomorrow. So, oh, I'll listen. She's a listener.
Oh, that's cool. Well, one I watched over the weekend was The Fog.
Oh, Jamie Lee Curtis
and Adrian Barbeau, and
I'm going to add that right now. That's much better than the remake.
Yeah, I tried to watch the remake, and it was the only good thing about that movie is the sweater that the guy wears.
Are we talking about the new one or Adrian Barbeau?
Oh, I'm talking. Well. Talking about the new one.
I was being catty. She was married to the director, I think.
Yeah, she was. She was in a few of his movies.
Well, John Carpenter, right?
Yeah, I think she was in Escape from New York. And, yeah, I think she was in The Swamp Thing, but I'm not sure if that was a John Carpenter movie or not. But she was good in the movie. I mean, she was a good actress.
Was she in The Thing?
I was trying to think if she was or not. I don't think so.
I never liked that one as much as the original, although it's a good one, and it's different. I don't know. I love that first, the one from 1951
or 52. I think I like them both equally. They're different. The second one was so much more gory. Yeah.
I think I liked the first one because I was about 10 years old and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. God, you have a good memory of that.
For years after. In fact, I'm not even sure now it doesn't affect me. When they opened that door and he's standing there.
I know. That's such a great scene. Love that.
And I think what works for me is he looks kind of humanoid.
Yeah.
It's not real far-fetched. It's like, wow. And I read where they tested that out by driving him around L.A.
I love that.
To see what people reacted. God.